Today on the Profitable Tradie Podcast. Get done on improving the business, not just getting projects done. All of these patterns will help you improve. I can 100% guarantee that. In 2025, we set an outrageous goal of creating $25 million profit businesses in 25. We didn't hit it. We blew it out of the water. We created 36.
Working with you sucks. This is why. If we can't start working in this way instead, I don't want to work with you anymore. Mindset is developed. Mindset is something that you can grow into. And if you're listening to any of these ways of looking at things and you're thinking, oh man, how do I get there? I'm like, you will. You will get there. You're not a tree. You can move. Your mindset will develop over time.
Now tune into this episode where we unpack how these business owners cracked the $1 million profit mark. Alrighty, welcome to the podcast, a Profitable Tradie Podcast. Tony Fraser-Jones, the host. Phil Smith, the other host.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Good, good. Yourself?
Yeah, coming in hot, ready to roll.
Mate, this is a really exciting episode today. As I said in the intro, we set a really exciting goal for this year, 25 black belts, which are $1 million profit businesses.
Yeah, not revenue, that's profit.
That's profit, and it's pretty exciting, and this all sort of kicked off earlier in the year, didn't it? We had a strategy meeting as a team right at the start of the year in a little old place called Tauranga in New Zealand. A nice spot. And we put a goal together, which is pretty exciting. It was sort of based on the vision we have for our business, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So the vision is?
Well, the vision is that we wanted to, you know, help trades business owners realize the life that they never thought was possible. So obviously with this, you know, we set all of our goals for the year, and some of them are internal, but, you know, really the big thing is we want to have a big, hairy, audacious goal or a BHAG, something that's going to be a massive effort and have a massive impact throughout the year. And so we decided 25 and 25, essentially $25 million profit businesses in 2025. And so we thought, hey, this is going to be tough. But, you know, we're up to the task. And that's obviously something that we've used, you know, internally as well to really drive the motivation of the team and just get everybody behind something that's meaningful and going to have a huge impact with our members, which is the reason we exist.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing, because our vision is helping tradies and contractors create the business and the life they never knew possible. And, you know, making $1 million profit is what most people never believe is possible. And it's, you know, it's a life-changing outcome for not only financial, but, you know, the time it buys, the freedom, the impact it has on family and communities and stuff. So we thought that's a great way to kind of make that vision come true.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't hit it.
We didn't hit it.
We blew past the 25.
We did blow past it. Yeah.
How many did we hit?
We got 36. So, yeah, we obviously award these at our member events every so often throughout the year. And so we've just wrapped up our last event for the year, and we finished on 36 black belts, which is just amazing. Like, I'm blown away. It's just so cool.
It's pretty humbling, isn't it? Because you know, it's a massive impact. So many people have had a life-changing experience. And I think the purpose of the pod today is, you know, after looking at these businesses, it's obvious that there are some patterns here.
Yeah.
There are some patterns to success. And from our experience and looking through these businesses, we think there's 8 key patterns that we've picked up. So what we're going to do on today's podcast, we're going to unpack what those 8 are.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll be very helpful, because, you know, these people who have done it have worked hard, but, you know, they've got 2 arms and 2 legs like everyone else. And so if you follow similar patterns, you're going to get great results as well. And I think that's the key lesson.
100%. If we can replicate what other people have done, then we're standing on the shoulders of giants. Just like Isaac Newton said, you know, if I've seen further, it's because I stood on the shoulders of giants. Well, hey, you've got an opportunity today to learn from those that have been, you know, where you want to go and done what you might not think is possible, but it is possible for you. And I think if we can replicate these patterns, you know, it's all very doable. So
it is.
Let's get stuck into it.
Yeah. Well, actually, just before we do, like you said, we have award systems for our members, and we use the sort of martial art belts system, right from white belt up to a black belt.
We actually go above that now as
well.
We do.
We've got the first dan, second dan, third dan.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, first dan, I think, is 1.25. Yep. Second dan is 1.5 million. Third dan is a $2 million net profit business. And we had several awarded of those this year as well.
We actually have to make some new dans because a couple of people are blowing a lot past the 2 mil mark, which is pretty crazy, man. It's just amazing.
It is incredible. And I think the thing to realize is not only are people, you know, getting black belts, but we have brown belts, so we're awarding a number of those. That's $750,000 of profit. Red belts, $500,000.
It goes all the way down. Yeah. So the white belt starts at a 50K net profit, you know, so that's, you know, people getting started, they're just starting to make some money, and all the way through. And we, you know, I remember when we first made the belt system, we thought a black belt, $1 million profit, like, man, I wonder how many of these we're going to give out. And then next thing, we're having to make the darns, and the next thing, we're setting goals like this, where it's like, hey, I wonder if we could get 25 black belts. Like, and this is new black belts. So yep. not including ones we've handed out previously. It was just 25 new ones this year and obviously hit 36. So yeah, it's just amazing to see. And I think we've had some really, really cool clients. Like, I don't know what first one comes to mind. You think about like Dan and Brody Stevens. I mean, they just hit a third darn black belt. This is a $2 million net profit. And I mean, I remember when they came to us, man, they were chaotic. Like everything was crazy. They actually had a decent sized business coming in. They were, you know, doing pretty high revenue, but they were losing millions. Like they were $1, $2 million loss per year off of 30 mil revenue. So they're a big business, but they were losing a lot of money and no one really knew what they were doing. Like weren't looking at their numbers, and they've made some really key shifts. Like, and now they're up to that $2 million plus net profit. And I think, you know, they're really in the details of their numbers. They know all their conversion rates across job types. They know their sales processes locked in, the margins on the jobs, the pricing is just absolutely on point. They're looking at stats like per tradesman, per job, everything, just to make sure that everything is hitting the marks that they want to have. And more importantly, they have a really clear structure now. Leadership roles are filled, doing 20s with their team, got all their meeting structures in place. So nothing slips through the cracks. Nothing gets missed. And it means that they're just, you know, dotting those I's, crossing those T's, and hitting all the goals that they try to hit. And I think one of the key things with them is they're very, very methodical about creating a really great plan and then just executing in exactly the way the plan was set out. And as a result, they get the results from the plan that they intended to get.
The absolute top blokes as well, really good men, which is a theme as well. The good guys can win, which is great.
Yeah.
So you know that's an example. There's 36 of these businesses, and there are patterns, as we said, and I think there's 8 key patterns, and some of them you mentioned there. So I think it'd be helpful to really dig into those patterns, so that if you're listening, you can just see how you rank against these, and know where you need to put the effort to moving forward. And you know, you may not get to a black belt, you may hopefully, but all of these patterns will help you improve. I can 100% guarantee that.
Yeah.
And the first one was no surprise to me because this is something that I've banged on about for years, so it's happy to know that I'm not completely crazy, is they know and show their numbers.
Yeah.
So they're across the financial numbers. This is massive.
Yeah.
And when I say they know and show it, they know them, but they also present them and look at them regularly.
Yeah.
And so basically that's a process of testing and tweaking, you know, see how you're going, where it's working, where is it not working, and continually refining. And you have to know and show your numbers to do that. So that's a big one. And there's some key numbers that they look at as well. So it's you know, there's some specifics here. And I think one thing that all these businesses are good at is understanding their gross margin. So they understand, you know, the productivity and the profitability of their jobs.
Yeah.
That's fundamentally what gross profit is how profitable are the jobs that we do for our clients?
Mm.
Because those are where you make money, and if they're not profitable, you've got a problem. So they know their gross margin, and they understand their gross profit per hour. That allows you to compare jobs.
Yeah, a lot of jobs are difficult to compare, right?
They like, are with margins.
If you're just looking at percentages or you're just looking at dollars, it's hard to get an apples for apples comparison. You know, material heavy work is probably going to be higher revenue, lower percentage GP, but it might be a good GP dollars per hour. Whereas like labor only work is going to be, you know, lower revenue, higher percentage margin, but you're going to have a potentially lower GP dollars per hour. They're very hard to compare if you can't get into that granular level of GP dollars per hour, which is something that all the black belt businesses are really across, and they're setting really good pricing targets around this, and then making sure that they don't slip. And as a result, every job is profitable, and you know, they're constantly and never endingly improving on these margins, slight tweak. And so they're just not leaving money on the table.
Yeah. I would probably not every single job they do is profitable.
No.
But what they do is when they price for a job, they are making sure that before they do it, there is profit potential in that job.
Yeah, I mean, things can go wrong.
That's right. Whereas other businesses, they'll just price jobs to win them. Yeah, that's the big shift.
That's the hard part, is that even if everything goes right, you still don't make money, which is you're set up for failure from the start. So black belt businesses just don't do that. It's really that simple. They get into weekly scorecards and KPIs. You know, they set targets around this and have deliverables meetings with their team, and they're making sure that not only do they know the numbers, but they're holding people accountable to achieving these numbers the way that they need to achieve them. And I think, you know, one of the key parts of this, you said they know, but also they show. And I think this is a really important part of the numbers game, is a lot of the time when things don't go so well, we sweep it under the rug, or we ignore it, or we turn a blind eye to it, and we certainly don't tell anyone. Whereas I think, you know, being very open with your numbers and talking about them and putting the good, the bad, and the ugly out there it helps you to look at things and see where you can improve and what you need to change, which is really the key to keeping things moving forward. You know, if you're not showing your numbers, then you're essentially hiding your results. You hide your results, it's going to be really, really hard to make any meaningful change for the things that aren't going so well.
Yeah, and those weekly deliverables, they're typically performance measures that key people in the team own. So it might be the estimator is responsible for the pricing work, the ops manager is responsible for the service delivery, and the GP on jobs. And so those key team members have to present those figures to the management team each week.
Yep.
And they own them.
Yep.
Whereas the owner kind of holds them accountable to it. So that's very, very powerful with these businesses. They're really across that.
Absolutely.
And they also are very strong on their monthly financial accounts. And that's basically just a profit and loss statement and a balance sheet. So they have a clean profit and loss. It's coded correctly. The cost of goods is all correct. The labor's in the right place. So they can see on a monthly basis how this business is performing. And then they look at their balance sheet. And the main things they're looking at in their balance sheet is their receivables and their payables and how liquid their business is. So how their cash flow stacks up. And they can see very quickly if their receivables are blowing out, getting too big, which means they're not collecting money, and they're very good at that. They don't let that happen.
Yeah.
You know, they're very, very firm on that. And one of the reasons they're firm on it is because they can see what's happening.
Yeah. Whereas when they can see it, they can take fast action.
That's
right. And they can nip things in the bud. Because I think one of the biggest problems is if you're not looking at your numbers, by the time you realize there's a problem, it's probably been going on for a long time. You just couldn't tell because you didn't have the data. And so, you know, if you're relying on gut, then you're going to be really, really screwed here. You know, because by the time you realize anything, it's too late. You know, whereas if you got the data, you're good to go.
Yeah. So it's in a sense, it's like driving a car. These million-dollar profit businesses have a very good dashboard. They're looking at how things are tracking. They know whether they're speeding or not speeding. They know what the oil temperature is. They know where the fuel's at, and they can take quick action. That's really the key. It's quite simple. So they don't rely on their gut. They rely on facts. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And like, not one of the 36 black belts is casual with their numbers. It's that simple.
It's impossible to have a $1 million profit business and be casual with your numbers. It's just that those two things don't go together.
That's it. Well, should we get into pattern number two?
Alrighty. Yeah,
cool. Well, for me, pattern number two is, you know, they build leadership teams and they trust them. So
that's important, that bit there.
Yeah.
And well,
discount that. They trust them. Like, if you're building a leadership team, you're bringing people in to take responsibility and accountability for different areas of your business, but you don't trust them to do that, you can't scale. I mean, it's like we've said before, you know, the difference between growth and control. You can't have both. You know, you can have oversight. You can be able to see everything. You can hold people accountable to what is controlled by other people, but they need to control it, or otherwise it just becomes too much. So key thing for these black belt businesses is that they got out of being the bottleneck or the choke point. And I think for a lot of people listening, if you really think about it, you probably are a bottleneck in at least one area of your business, if not multiple. You are the bottleneck. And if you remain the bottleneck, you cannot grow past that level. The business is just too complex. And so that's something that these guys are, and girls are, really, really good at, is relieving themselves of being a bottleneck.
Yeah, and this is huge, and it's often hidden.
Yeah.
And these black belt profit businesses, $1 million profit businesses, have understood that this bottleneck, they've seen it, and they've taken responsibility for it. And it's simple things like, hey, if they're still the pricing person in their business, they look at it and realize that actually I've only got 10 hours a week I can do pricing. And my business needs to be generating $400,000-$600,000 worth of revenue a month. I physically cannot price enough work to do that.
Well, if you got to win 500,000, you might have to price 7, 8,
a million, whatever it is.
Like, so again, it's not even just pricing more work; it's you got to price a lot more work to win more work, right? So you become a real bottleneck.
Yeah, and you just can't. You just physically can't grow past that. And then you know what tends to happen in those businesses where it is choked at the estimation point of view is you don't end up hiring new people because you think the work's not out there, but the work's not out there because you're a choke point, because you're not pricing enough work, you're not looking for enough work. So that freeing up the choke point is massive, and it's pretty simple. You've got 40 hours a week. If you employ more people, you multiply yourself.
Yep.
So now you've got 80, 120, 160, et cetera, et cetera. That's basically what they're doing.
Yeah, and more stuff gets done, more results get enjoyed. And yep. I mean, like, and this applies to all areas of the business. You know, like, you get to a point where more work's coming in, you need to take on more guys, but you resist that because you don't have enough management, and every guy feels like another bum to wipe. So again, that's where you need management in the field, like ops managers, foremen, that, you know, site leads, you know, leading hands, whatever you want to call them. But you need those managers so that you can take on more guys, so that you can do more work. Or otherwise, what happens is if you don't take on more guys because you can't handle it, then you can win more work, but your revenue per month won't go up. up, it just spreads out over more months. So you end up with this huge forward work pipeline, but you don't actually grow. And then what happens is that your forward work pipeline starts dying because people don't want to wait 8 months for their job. So that doesn't work either. So you need to be able to ease these bottlenecks. And these guys and girls, you know, they're hiring ops managers, foremen, estimators, building pricing teams, they've got office manager, you know, and somewhere along the line, you know, these guys are getting salespeople, marketers, basically wherever they become a bottleneck and that starts to hinder the business, they get someone in to ease that bottleneck and then that, you know, basically helps them to grow past that point.
That's right. And then once they have those people, they run really strong meeting rhythms. We call them meeting rhythms, which is basically they have set meetings which hold the communication and the accountability for those managers they've put in place. Sometimes they're slightly different, but the basic pattern is they'll have weekly, you know, team meetings or department meetings, and then they'll have strategy meetings as well, which are, you know, monthly and quarterly and annually, as a pattern to make sure the communications are happening, because their role goes from doing stuff to actually kind of being more like the conductor of the orchestra, making it all happen.
Yeah,
and the key here is they don't micromanage, as you said. They're not putting their fingers in all the pies, because that just mucks everything up. You know, if you've got a leadership team and you're trying to do everything and control everything, there's no point having a leadership team.
Yeah,
because it's still just you with some sort of, you know, some lackeys to help.
Yeah,
and that doesn't work. So they hire leaders, they invest time in them, they trust them. That's massive. So I think the key insight is that these million-dollar profit businesses, they're not lone wolves. They actually build leaders around themselves, and they build leadership teams, and then they trust them.
100%. Well, let's get into pattern number three.
This is a huge one. They're proactive with hiring.
Yes.
So what that means is they are on the front foot with this. They don't wait till the last minute. They certainly don't hire out of desperation. That's a terrible strategy, because it means you typically take the best of a bad bunch.
Yep.
And so they don't do that. So they're always looking to hire. They always have ads up, and if someone comes and they're not quite ready for them, they go about building wait lists of staff as well.
Yeah,
which is cool. They have a process as well, so they have a clear steps in a hiring process. That's one of the main processes and systems they have in their business, because they understand that that's the most important thing to get good people.
It's absolutely crucial. You just can't be taking on the wrong people. I was reading a Peter Drucker book the other day. He's dead just now, Tony.
He is, you're right.
Yeah. Do you like that?
Did you well.
Yeah, you good with that? All right, sweet. Well, you know, I was reading a Peter Drucker book the other day, and he's talking about how it's so much harder to try to get someone who's bad to even be mediocre than it is to get someone who's pretty decent to be excellent. So, you know, the thing is, not everybody comes as a finished product all the time. You can't hire a unicorn every time. But you know what? If you're hiring bad people, it's going to be a mission to even get them to mediocre.
Impossible.
You need to be taking in, like, good to excellent people. And even if they need some work, it's like, it's going to be easy work. And, you know, they're going to be driven, they're going to be hungry, they're going to be skilled, great attitude, values fit. And if you're using that process well, you can really figure out who ticks those boxes, and you're taking on the right people. You know, a good team needs a lot less work, a lot less oversight, a lot less systemization. Still needs these things, but compared to having a bad team, man, like, that's just a...
And so, these million-dollar profit businesses understand this implicitly. They understand that the key to success is getting good people. And therefore, they're very proactive with the hiring, not only looking to hire, but, you know, having high standards about hiring, having a process. And, you know, we teach them a 9-step hiring process, 9 boxes to go through to make sure you do it all right.
It's actually 11 steps, but there's 9 boxes.
Yeah, 11 steps.
Okay, a couple of extra steps that sit around the edges.
Yeah. Well, I obviously need to upgrade my process there. And the other thing with the hiring, this is massive. These winners understand that the market for talent is more important than the market for clients.
Yeah.
And so they put more into their marketing for team members than they do in for clients, because it's harder to get good people to work for you than it is to get good clients. There's no doubt about that.
And it's faster as well. It's not just easier to get the work, it's faster. So the thing is if you're trying to get work, that can come in quite quickly when you're marketing for work, but then you'll have this lag where you don't have enough people to actually do the work you just want, which is why you need to be proactively hiring. It creates the vacuum. You now have extra capacity on the tools and in the field, and it's a lot that takes a little bit longer if you want to get the best people. And so the thing is like, you've got to start that first. It creates the capacity, and then you're working on filling that capacity with more work, because it's going to come quicker and easier. So has to be in that order, which can be a little bit scary.
It's counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, and it feels chicken and egg, but it's actually not. You know, like, it's really not. Like, you have to get the capacity to do the work before you hunt the work, or otherwise you can't hunt the work because you won't be able to do it anyway.
And that's what these winners really understand, is you have to build the capacity. You hire at 80%. That's the rule that they understand.
Mm.
At 80% capacity, you hire your next person, because otherwise if you leave it till 95, 100%, you're hiring out of desperation. You have no time. It's chaos. It's an absolute bun fight. And so you make bad decisions then.
Yeah.
But in terms of the marketing, I just want to circle back to that. They market for talent. So what they do is they actually create a marketing brand in the marketplace. They create a brand as an employer of choice.
Mm.
And so they put a lot of effort into things like their social media. You might think it's for clients, but it's actually for team, because they're posting lots of images of team events, great jobs, you know, customer referrals, customer testimonials, the cool projects they're doing, the values, all that stuff. They're putting that up on the internet. And what they find is for the first couple of months, not much changes. And then month 4, 5, 6, all of a sudden, when they put ads up, they get much better applicants applying, because that brand has been in the marketplace and it really resonates with the right people. And this is the little gold nugget that people don't understand. But if you put the effort into that, it's really going to change your business.
Well, you get people coming into a job interview being like, hey, I've been following your Instagram. I saw this and I saw that and this looks amazing. And whereas before they came in, you're like, hey, how did, you know, what do you know about our company? And they'll be like, nothing, I saw a job ad. Which, I mean, there is a massive difference to the quality of this applicant, right?
Yeah, they're cold.
Yeah.
But if they've been nurtured by your brand, then they come in warm and they're actually wanting, you know, they have a desire. There's some scarcity and urgency that's in your favor, not the other way around. So that's very powerful.
Plus you get the better people, right? Because 100%. End of the day, if I'm a really good tradesman and all I see is a job ad from a company I've never heard of, like, why would I move? I mean, it might be an extra dollar in pay or something like that per hour, like, cool. But the thing is, if I've been seeing heaps of great content, you know, from your proactive marketing for talent, you know, this is the kind of stuff that's going to make a great trade and say, hey, I'm pretty happy where I am, but like, wow, look at that. I'd love to work there. So, you know, you get better people too. Anyway, let's get into pattern number 4.
Number 4, this one surprised me. And Cam, our head of coaching, actually, you know, he pointed this one out. It's very clear and very clever. They have clear roles and clear leadership. And what that means is a lot of these businesses are actually partnerships.
Yeah, I was really interested in that.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, isn't it?
It was pretty interesting. Yeah. Like, a lot of those 36 are partnerships, yep. Whether it was, you know, two business partners or a husband-wife duo or the likes.
Yep.
They were partnerships. Yep. And I think a lot of the time, husband-wife, we say, oh, you know, I've got a wife or I've got a husband. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but like, are you a partnership in the business or do they just help out a little bit? And I think it's the ones that are a partnership but also have the clear roles in leadership.
That's the key thing.
That combo seems to be a winner.
Yeah, and the key thing here is that one person is the boss and there are clear roles. It's not like, oh, there's two business partners and you've got two bosses and all the team sort of can go to either of you, and that creates confusion, lack of clarity, it creates a lack of focus and basically leads to dilution of your culture. So these businesses, they have partnerships, but they have one boss, one person who's the CEO or the GM, and there's clear roles about who does what, who's responsible for what. So what that means is much better alignment on decisions because someone has the final responsibility, and two, there's not hidden power struggles.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting, but very important.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, obviously having a partnership situation, I mean, my guess is it would be really good and really helpful. And the reason why there's a lot of, you know, good partnerships in there is it gives you a sounding board, a support person, someone who's on your level. You're not just in it alone. Like sometimes just being able to kick an idea around with someone who's actually an equal in that respect, it's just super helpful. Gives you a lot more capacity for thinking and idea creation, but so important that one of you is the boss and one of you is not. So it's that combination of you've got the support, you've got the teammate, but at the same time, you need that clarity or otherwise it can't work for the operations of the business.
And these partnerships differ. Some are 50-50, some are, you know, 80-20, whatever it is. The principles are the same. Clear structure, clear roles, one boss, unity of command. That's very, very important.
Yeah, 100%. Well, should we get into pattern number 5?
Number 5, they understand the value of their time and they protect their personal hourly rate.
Yeah.
Which is different to charge out rate.
That, yeah, this make is not what someone would pay you for an hour on the tools.
No,
this is the value of your time.
This is like a really hidden commonality amongst all the high performers. They know that their time is valuable and they know that they must stay out of the low value tasks. And what I mean by that is they stay out of the $30, $40 hour tasks. You know, a lot of admin stuff, they're just not involved in that because they know that the opportunity cost of spending their time on that is huge. And an example, which is a very clear example, is you might be a very skilled plumber in your business, and there's a hot water leak somewhere, and so you could go and fix that, and there's an emergency call out charge, and you might have a job for $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever it is. Might not be that much, but it'd be hundreds or a low thousands. Now that might take you 2 hours. Or you could spend 2 hours actually nurturing some general contractors or some building contractors who could give you hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of work over the course of the next year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, if you do the former, you're going to miss out on the latter.
Yeah.
And so they understand that trade-off of time and value.
Well, even on the very minimum amount, if you want to be $1 million a year profit business, that means that at the very, very minimum, you as the owner have an hourly rate of about $500. And so I think the thing is, it can often be really easy. I think quite early in our program, you know, business owners learn, if I can pay someone $30 an hour to do that, I shouldn't be doing it, because my value is more like $100 or $200 an hour. And I think that's quite easy to get your head around, is you know, getting rid of those very low value tasks. When I'm talking very low, I'm talking $20, $30, $40 an hour. One thing I think that's really interesting with the $1 million profit businesses is that they've pushed that out to a higher level. And so as a result, yes, they got rid of these lower level tasks. But basically, if it's not something that's going to be $500 per hour
or north of that,
then it should be done by someone else. And so not only that, but they're bringing people in to really augment capacity and also ability, you know, because it means that's going to free you up to hire some really high level people that are going to make a massive impact in your business. Because you go, wow, man, I might have to pay this guy. Imagine if I had to pay someone $80 an hour. That would be crazy, right? And I'm like, compared to your hourly rate, that's peanuts.
Chicken feet.
Yeah. And so as a result, like, they stop hamstringing themselves on, I could get someone who's okay for X amount, but if I really wanted to get a winner who's going to change the game, oh, they're too expensive. And it's like, there's really not someone who's too expensive if they're actually going to change the game. And when you start understanding your actual value per hour, you realize that if they can take a higher level task off you, one that has more impact in the business, will make a bigger difference, and hire someone who's better than you at it and has more time to do it and loves doing it more than you, then this will be done more often, more frequently, and better than you would ever have done it. And if it's really that important, that's going to make a massive difference. But I think a lot of the time, people that are not at this level will find it hard to bring in high level people, because they balk at the cost. These $1 million profit businesses, the owners don't think that way. They understand their value per hour, and they can make quite clear trade-offs between, you know, who else they can delegate to and bring in.
And they realize, you know, once you've hired your first $100,000 person, you're like, man, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
And then you hire a $150,000 person, you're like, man, they look like they make the $100,000 person look like a chump.
Yeah.
And then you hire a $200,000 person, you're like, flipping heck, I can see why they're worth that.
Yeah.
And so you keep up leveling that. So that's a huge, massive insight. They have a much different view of money and the value of money. And they also protect their time with some good planning. They have a default calendar. They lock stuff in, they block it in, and they don't let the urgencies of life push them around. So I think that's massive. They delegate aggressively to those high-value people,
yep.
And they really push decision-making down the chain so that it frees up their headspace. And they're good at finding the who, not how. You know, who's going to do this for me, not how do I do it?
Yeah.
So that's a big thing, because as tradespeople and contractors and technicians, we're really good at figuring out how to do stuff. That's kind of what we do. You know,
yeah.
We figure out problems with our hands and make stuff happen.
Yeah.
But that is a real killer if you want to grow a highly profitable business, because if you try and figure out how to do everything, you just run out of time. So you've got to figure out who's going to do it. Their job's to figure out how to do it,
yeah.
Not yours.
And if you want to bring in that who, not how mentality, and you want to be able to push stuff down to the who's rather than you figuring out how, you're never going to be able to do that with low-level people. I mean, and the thing is, it's like, I don't know any $1 million profit businesses that are built off the back of people that are paid less than 80K a year. You know, like, obviously you're going to have a lot of people that are less than 80K, but you're going to have some people that are going to get paid some decent money, And like, you're going to need them, or you just can't break through some of the barriers on the way to that $1 million profit. And it's just going to be a lot easier to understand when and how to bring these people in if you understand the value of your time, which is why this is so important.
Critical.
So yeah, should we get number 6?
Number 6, I love this one. They confront hard conversations. They have the hard conversations.
Yeah.
They're not wallflowers. They're not necessarily rude or obnoxious, but they are assertive and, you know, relatively direct. And they have these conversations with their team and with their clients. And this is where, you know, their mindset really shows up. And so there's not a lot to say about this apart from the fact that, you know, they'll say no to clients.
Yeah.
They'll, you know, if a client's been a pain in the backside, they'll say no, and they'll say, no, we can't help you right now. And they'll exit them as a client as well. They'll say, look, we can't do your jobs anymore. Or the smart ones will put the prices up to a point which these people don't use them anymore. So that's massive. And
even on a lower level, you just set better boundaries from the start.
Yeah,
like sometimes it doesn't actually even need to get to that. You can just say, hey, working with you sucks. This is why. If we can't start working in this way instead, I don't want to work with you anymore. Yep. And sometimes people go, wow, I never really realized that. I'm really sorry. Yep. Yeah, we can totally do it this way. And then actually bad client becomes good client. Bad employee becomes good employee, you know? So I think the thing is they never fear these conversations. They get on them early. They have them very directly. They set better boundaries. And if those boundaries are not met, then hey, sayonara. And as a result, then they have employees that actually work better. They have clients that work better for them. You know, like, and everything is just easier. It creates way less friction. And I think the thing is I've never really met a $1 million profit business owner who gets walked on. You can't be both. You can't be a simpy little, like, wimpy person.
Yes, a yes man.
Yeah, you can't be that person and be making $1 million profit per year. It's just not a thing.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Yep. All right. Should we get in the next pattern?
I think it's number 7. We might actually have 9 of these.
I think we might have 9.
We have 9.
We've
got a bonus. Got a bonus.
Bonus one. Yeah.
Number 7 is they have a high cadence of completion.
Yeah.
And again, this is something that Cam pointed out, but it's obvious now that we think about it. We run a 6-week planning cycle here in our at Profit $1 million Tradie program, and so every 6 weeks our clients plan out what they're going to work on their business, and these winners, they complete their projects at a much higher rate.
Yeah.
Which means simply they're working on improving their business, which means they're hiring more people to help, which means they know their value and they stay out of the weeds. Some of the things we talked about. So they really, that's a really important distinction. So they do stuff that improves the business, not just getting jobs done.
Yeah.
And the people who don't make it here, they tend to just focus on getting the jobs done this week.
Well, I think about one real good example is Emma and Adam from Wardle Construction. So, you know, we've had Emma on the podcast.
Yeah, she's an absolute weapon.
Man, she is an implementer. And Adam too. You know, like these guys, I think one of the biggest things I've seen with them, you know, obviously they're, you know, strong black belt clients, you know, making really good money, but they have such a great business. And I think one of the best things I see about them is that when there's a problem, they put it in the plan, they figure out how they're going to solve it, and then they get after it, man. Like, they work really, really hard. They execute at a very, very fast rate. Like, the completion rate of projects is out the gate, and as a result, things improve very quickly too. And I think that's one massive thing that I've seen with them and with all of the black belt businesses is, you know, they find a problem, they make a plan, they execute really, really, you know, hard.
Yep.
They're fast, they're proactive, they're accurate with their execution, and they get shit done. And as a result, results flow. You know, it's just that simple.
Yeah, it's kind of, it seems obvious, but it's not obvious often when you're stuck in the weeds that you actually have to action stuff for stuff to improve.
Yeah.
And I think the thing here is they're not worried about perfection as well. You know, because done is better than perfect. So they get stuff done. They get it out in play, and sometimes they need to improve it a little bit as they go along, whereas the people who really struggle to make progress here, they try and get it perfect before they ship it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
You're never going to be perfect anyway. You could spend all the time in the world getting something perfect, get all the advice you want. It's not going to be perfect. You know, it's like that old George Patton, like, no battle plan ever survives first contact. Or Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yep. Or a good plan violently executed today is better than a perfect plan.
Also George Patton. Yeah. I think the point with this is that it doesn't matter how good your plan is, until you start implementing it and actually executing on your projects, you don't actually know what's going to go wrong, and you're going to have to tweak it anyway. So, you know, where I say 80% out the drawer is better than out the door is better than 100% in the drawer. So get it done, get it shipped, get on with it.
High cadence of completion is massive. Next one, number 8, and then we've got the bonus number 9.
Oh, yeah.
This one is interesting. They ask more questions and they focus on learning. Now, I think the focus on learning is probably obvious, but the ask more questions is an interesting one, and this is another gem from Cam. Thanks, Cam.
Yeah.
Look, we have a community here at Profitable Tradie. There's 600 or 700 people in our community, and these winners are way more active in our community.
Yeah.
So they ask more questions.
Yep.
They ask more questions of the coaches. They use more coach time. They aren't too proud to ask for help. So there's not that massive ego of, oh, what happens if I sound stupid or I look like a clown because I ask a question? So they really get into that. And they read, they listen to podcasts, they look at books, and they watch more of our training videos.
Yep.
So they're just actively involved in stuff.
We keep a lot of stats on this, yep. And quite simply, and the million-dollar businesses, I mean, the stats on their consumption of trainings, the stats on how often they ask questions in all of our different community settings, how often they're reaching out to coaches, how often they're looking for feedback on what they're doing. Like, it's out the gate higher. And so the thing is I think it's a natural thing in life is to be afraid of looking silly, to be worried about asking for help. And the reality is the people that win more are the people that get more help. I mean, dude, like, you only know what you know. And the whole thing that we do is we help people to learn stuff they didn't know. It's not that it's hard. It's just no one taught it to you before. So if you don't actively seek that stuff and don't actively get advice, and even if you're not working with us or someone similar, it's the same thing. Is if you're not seeking, an increase in knowledge, an increase in insight, then how will you improve? Like, what, with luck? I mean, I hope you're that lucky, but most people aren't.
Yeah, don't leave this to luck. And the sort of the next part of this, which is really super interesting, is that these winners not only learn more, but they teach and they give back to the community more.
Mm.
So they're the first people to put their hand up and help other people. They're the first people to volunteer to share their wins or their ideas or to do a small training or to be involved in podcasts or whatever. So they really act with an abundance mentality. They're not scared of sharing how to win.
Well, I want to give you an example here because this one was really special to me. At one of our recent client events over in LA, Santa Monica, we had James Martel up on stage, and like, this guy's crushing it, man. Like, he's absolutely crushing it. And
great
guy
as well.
Such an amazing dude. And you'd think that someone who's crushing it, a lot of people will have this mentality of, oh, well, he must be sitting on all the secrets. It's the opposite. He's sitting on stage in front of the entire membership base saying, this is my telephone number, my personal mobile number. If you ever need anything, just call me and I will tell you everything I possibly can about it. Like, that's the mentality of somebody who is a winner. Like, he's like, yeah, I've come, pretty far. I've figured a lot of stuff out. A lot of it the hard way, and then a lot of it with help as well. But the point is like, this is the kind of guy that's sitting there on stage giving everybody his personal mobile number and like urging them to ask him anything. That's the giver mentality that lives with these million-dollar profit businesses. You just, it's like Zig Ziglar says, you can get anything in life that you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. And yep. I think give to gain, it's such a powerful thing.
It is.
And those that give, they always gain. It's really that simple.
Yeah, and when you teach, you learn twice. You learn doubly well. And so these people, they get involved in the community. And I think the thing that they're doing there also is surrounding themselves with other winners.
Yeah.
So they love to rub shoulders with other people who are doing well. But they also rub shoulders with the people who may not be doing as well, but everyone has a lesson to share.
Hmm.
And so they might pick up a gold nugget from someone who doesn't have as big a business but has a certain part of their business dialed in. Maybe it's a little marketing strategy they're using or a cheat sheet or a checklist or a piece of software. And so they don't mind where they get that from. And so I think that's very powerful. They definitely love surrounding themselves with winners and being open to that learning and then giving it back.
Oh, it's crucial to success. Well, should we get into number nine?
The bonus round. Yeah. There's no doubt that these winners have a different mindset.
Yeah.
And so what's going on in the top 2 inches is massive. And I think we've touched on a lot of this already, but for me, these people, they aren't scared of being unpopular.
Yep.
Or better said, but they don't have to be liked by everyone. They don't do stuff to be liked.
Yep.
This is massive because a lot of people find it difficult to take the action they need to because they're scared of what people will think about them.
Yeah, and it's not about being a dick or doing stuff to be disliked. It's not about that. It's just about not being so tied to needing to be liked. You stick to your own boundaries. You stick to your own standards. And, that tends to attract people that want to play by those rules. And everything becomes easier because you work with like-minded people, whether it's your team, your clients, anyone. You have the same way of looking at stuff and things are easier. It's really that simple.
Yeah. The next one, this is important. They let their team try, fail, and learn.
Yeah.
And so they, they let their team make mistakes and they understand that they weren't always perfect. They realize that their skill has come through learning and making mistakes as well. And so therefore, the team members are going to have to do some of this as well. Now, they don't like it. Nobody likes it. Mm. But they understand that it's absolutely critical. Mm. So I think that's important.
Well, I had this described to me by Josh Harper. So another one of our boardroom clients, black belt business. And he said, imagine you had a kid and they're just learning to walk and they stand up on their feet for the first time and they fall on their bum. And you go, well, guess they can't walk. You chuck them in a wheelchair and commit to pushing them around for life. Like, it'd be madness. You're like, no, they're learning to walk, right? So, like, the thing is like, if you're not going to actually commit to that learning process and understand that when you delegate to people, when you push things down, that they're going to make mistakes sometimes. That's part of the learning process. Now, there's a difference if they never, ever, ever get it right for a prolonged period of time, don't have the capability, don't, you know, that's a different thing. But when you're pushing down to capable people, the first time they make a mistake, man, it's like, don't rip it off them or micromanage. Like, you need to empower your team. You just have to.
Yeah. Next is they really have let go of having to control everything. This is a massive, massive thing. They understand, as we mentioned, that there's an inverse relationship between control and growth, and so you cannot be across everything and grow.
Yeah.
It's just impossible. Doesn't mean they don't keep control by through accountability, and they know their numbers, so they know what's going on, but they let their team go and do stuff. That's important. And they also know their value, and I think this is massive. They know that they're worth it. They know that the service they provide is worth it. They feel good about making money. They're not, you know, money's not a dirty word. They're like comfortable to get paid well because they know they do a good job.
Yep.
They understand that they need to be paid well to pay their team well. They understand that making a profit is the reward for taking risk in business, and that's what they should be doing, and that's appropriate.
Yeah,
so totally. They really understand that. And some people struggle with that, and so they'll sabotage their success. And the last one, I love this, is they treat their team with respect and they build trust, but they also expect high performance and they hold people accountable.
Totally.
So they're not a dictator, but they have high standards, but they really care about their people, but they have high standards. And so that's that kind of, that sort of interplay there is very, very important. You know, they don't just expect high standards and not care. Well, no, they don't just care and they're not expect high standards.
In my view, if you really care about your people, that means you want the best for them, right? Which means you should want them to perform in their job.
Mm.
Right? Like, if you don't want them to perform in their job, if that's not important to you, then I would argue you don't really care about this person because you're going to risk them losing their job due to a lack of performance. Like, that's not care. That's cowardice. And so I think the reality is, if you really care about your team, you also have to hold them accountable and drive their performance. It's in the best interest of their employment. It's in the best interest of their growth, personally and professionally. It's in the best interest of their career. It's in the best interest of their life. And so if you really care about this person, you actually have to do both. You have to be honest with your team. You have to drive them. If you don't, I would argue you don't care. And I would say, for people that are, you know, obviously the mindset is different for these people. It is different. But I think it's really important for everyone listening to understand that it probably wasn't always that way. And it starts with being open-minded to these views. And then as you're open-minded, you can try it, you can learn, you can have these reinforced, and it becomes your way of thinking.
Well, and I think that's not something that I'd thought about, but we're just talking about this. This is probably the most important mindset. They have a growth mindset.
Absolutely.
So they're open to learning, and they understand that the way they see things now may not be the best way to see them, and there may be improvements. The people who really struggle to grow have a fixed mindset, and so they think they know everything, or they think they understand how everything works. And so that's a big difference. These people are so growth mindset focused that it's just incredible.
I tell you something you will never hear come out of the mouth of a black belt business is that will never work. They will never say that, ever. The way that they'll say it is, how could I make that work in my context? That would be what they would say. And it's really that simple. Growth mindset versus, you know, fixed mindset is really the key. And if you find yourself saying that'll never work, maybe that's a clue. And you know, start with those top 2 inches.
Yep.
You know, if you ask yourself a different question, how could I make this work for me? That's a very easy place to start. So I think we've said some good stuff. Should we land this plane?
If there's one thing I want you to take from this episode, it's this, that $1 million profit business isn't luck or a fantasy. It's about following patterns. Now, the 36 business owners we've talked about followed a pattern, they did the work, and they proved what's possible. Now, if others follow these patterns of behavior and they stay consistent, then $1 million profit business is within their reach too.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks heaps for listening. We'll catch you all again next time.
See you later.
Next week on the Profitable Tradie Podcast. The reason many people don't hit their goals or create the business and life they want isn't for a lack of willpower or commitment. Often, it's the lack of the right tools to turn their goals and dreams into reality. Now, tune into this episode where we talk through a powerful tool to help you plan a super successful year where you have more time for fun and vacations as well as improving your business. Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Profitable Tradie Podcast.